dearest darling, it is not easy to write because of the cold. 70 degrees below zero and nothing but the shelter of our tent.
When your day is long and the night is yours alone. When you're sure you've had enough of this life.
I'm Melanie Tate and this is The Art of Letters. Today we're exploring letters written about death.
We are in a very tight corner, and I have doubts of pulling through. In our short lunch hours, I take advantage of a very small measure of warmth to write letters preparatory to a possible end. If anything happens to me, I should like you to know how much you have meant to me. Cherish no sentimental rubbish about remarriage. When the right man comes to help you in life, you ought to be your happy self again. Make the boy interested in natural history, if you can. It is better than games. Try to make him believe in a god. It is comforting. Oh, my dear, what dreams I had of his future, and yet, oh, my girl, I know you will face it stoically. Your portrait and the boy's will be found in my breast. What lots and lots I could tell you of this journey. What tales you would have for the boy. But oh, what a price to pay. To forfeit the sight of your dear, dear face. Captain Robert Scott, South Pole, March 1912.
Antarctic explorer Robert Scott died on March 29, 1912. Knowing he wouldn't make it home, he wrote the letter you've just heard to his wife. His son was 2.5 at the time. After he died, Scott was considered a national hero in England. But after a rush of memorial building, historians have waxed and waned on Scott's own culpability in the failure of the expedition, which led not just to his own death, but the deaths of his entire team. Whatever went wrong, and whoever's fault it was, Scott's letter survives as an act of love and bravery. It's a terrible thing to have to write from your own grave.
My only little girl, Jana, God bless my life as a woman with you. As your father wrote in the poem from a German prison, God gave you to us because he loved us. Providence planned my life in such a way I could not give you nearly all that my mind and my heart had prepared for you. The reason was not that I loved you little. I love you just as purely and fervently as other mothers love their children. But I understood that my task here in the world was to do you good by seeing to it that life becomes better and that all children can live well. I kiss your hair, eyes and mouth. I stroke you and hold you in my arms. I really held you so little. I shall always be with you. Milada Horakova, 26th of June, 1950. The night before her execution at Prague's Pankrac prison on the charge of high treason.
At the age of 12, a young girl, Claire, was given this letter by her mother on the anniversary of her father's death.
12 December 2011. To my darling girl, before I had you, I didn't know I wanted to be a dad. And then you were born, blue from not breathing. And I knew that I would give anything in the world to be your father. I was so scared that you wouldn't start breathing, but you did, and I became a father. I'm so proud of you. I have always, always loved you very deeply. Even on the walks I took with you to get you to sleep at 2 in the morning, I thought I was very lucky to have you in my life. I used to walk around and around the park with you in the baby pouch. I put a bit of muslin over your head so you weren't distracted by the lights. Then I'd slowly lift the fabric to see if you'd fallen asleep. And there were your eyes, wide open, looking at me. I'd keep walking. You have a great mind and a sense of what's right and wrong. You're funny. You're beautiful. I think you'll do incredible things, and I wish I could be here to see them. I love you more than anything. Love, Dad.
Claire read that letter, hung her head, and cried very quietly till the paper got wet, and then she kept going. A lot of us have trouble expressing ourselves in the face of death. What can you say that's of any sense or use? We've tried to counter this difficulty by developing rigorous social conventions for how we write about death. Those conventions were surely at their height in the reign of this woman.
Queen Victoria, 20th December 1861. My own dearest, kindest father, for as such have I ever loved you. The poor fatherless baby of 8 months is now the utterly broken-hearted and crushed widow of 42. My life as a happy one is ended. The world is gone for me. If I must live on, it is henceforth for our poor fatherless children, for my unhappy country, which has lost all in losing him. But, oh, to be cut off in the prime of life is too awful, too cruel.
After the death of Prince Albert, Victoria drew her entire nation with her into mourning. There were runs on black muslin and jet beads, and grieving became more codified than ever before. A whole language developed around death, heavy in symbolism and loss. The condolence letter was part of this social convention. Our producer Sophie went to a very exclusive girls' primary school. In year three, the 20 girls in her class were given an unusual writing exercise. They had to compose a condolence letter. Believe me, we never did anything like that at Robertson Public School. Sophie was 8, and she and her class were instructed to write to the wife of Mr. Jones, who died in circumstances Sophie can no longer remember. There was no actual Mr. Jones. He came purely from the fairly gothic imagination of her teacher. The little girls, dressed in tartan tunics and their hair in tight braids, each had to read out their letter to the class, which must have made for a fairly maudlin afternoon. Sophie kept her letter.
Dear Mrs. Jones, I heard recently that your husband died. You must be very, very sad. If you would like, I could come over and keep you company in your hour of need. I could bring some chocolate biscuits if you like. Please let me know if you think this is a good idea. Yours sincerely, Sophie.
I'm not sure if Sophie writes many condolence letters, but I'm hoping she stopped writing phrases like, in your hour of need. But I do like the offer of chocolate biscuits. Genius. Letters of condolence give us an insight into how we weave language to provide comfort and sympathy to those who need it. Families who keep their letters for generations generally have letters and cards bordered in black mourning paper. The neat script written between the borders tells us of the awful news or responds to it, often in very formal, set ways that underlines the emotion and sadness of the occasion.
Rinella, Santa Maria, Aeolian Islands, 25th of January, 1896. My dear son, after advising you of my good health, I hope that you are all well and in good health. Dear son, with much sadness, I'm writing these few lines to let you know of the death of your dear mother. She has passed away to a better life on the 21st of this month. She has died a happy death, as God wills it. I do not want you to have too much sorrow. You, my dear son, must accept the wish of God. I was the first one to have this sad knowledge to have lost my dear companion. For 2 days she was well looked after by the priest. I have experienced the sadness of losing my own wife, and we must accept the wish of God, because we can't do anything about it. Your sister is in good health. Look after your health. Always do the will of God. I close with best wishes. Your sister embraces you. For now she is not writing because she is overcome. I embrace you and say goodbye. Your father, Giuseppe Costa, writing to his son Giacomo in Sydney.
The 23rd of December, 1882. Tattykill Farm, Knockaleary, Northern Ireland. Written to William Irwin, Ballarat, Victoria. Dear brother, it is with sorrowful heart I write these few lines to you. I lost a good partner on the 9th of this month. Eleanor died, or rather fell asleep in Christ after 3 weeks of very severe sickness. Her complaint was bronchitis. She had frequent returns of this the last 10 years, but always got out of it. This time she did not want for good care and doctoring, but all was of no use. All we can say, God's will must be done. She died trusting in the Lord Jesus Christ. I remain your dear brother to death, Joseph Irwin.
When Queen Victoria died in 1901, the newspapers announcing the news were themselves bordered in black. The Queen's death was deeply affecting. How could it not be after she'd sat on the throne for so long? But the cult of mourning she'd maintained after Albert's death already seemed out of step, and the brutality of World War I, with death ever present, meant that never again would the rituals around death be so formalised. William Malone was 56 when he fought at Gallipoli. He wrote a letter to his wife back in New Zealand in 1916.
My sweetheart, you know I loved you and have always loved you, and we have had many years of happiness together. If, at any time in the past, I've been absorbed in affairs, it was that I might make proper provision for you and the children. I regret very much now that I have lost more happiness than I need have done. Forgive also anything unkindly or hard I have done in the past. My desire for life, so that I may see and be with you again, could not be greater.
Malone died on the Gallipoli Peninsula a few days after that note was written. Despite the more relaxed mourning rituals of the post-Victorian era, it remains important to give comfort to the grieving, and it's important for all of us to do it well, without cliche, without too much advice or meaningless attempts at good cheer. Simple, heartfelt empathy is best. Here's F. Scott Fitzgerald writing to his friends Gerald and Sarah Murphy on the death of their 16-year-old son, Patrick. 2 years before Patrick's death, the Murphy's other son had died, leaving Gerald and Sarah with one remaining child, Honoria.
January 31, 1937. The telegram came today, and the whole afternoon was so sad with thoughts of you and the happy times we once had. Another link binding you to life is broken, and with such insensate cruelty that it is hard to say which of the two blows was conceived with more malice. I can see the silence in which you hover now after this 7 years of struggle, and it would take words like Lincoln's in his letter to the mother who had lost 4 sons in the war to write you anything fitting at the moment. The sympathy you will get will be what you have had from each other already, and for a long, long time you will be inconsolable. But I can see another generation growing up around Honoria, and an eventual peace somewhere, an occasional port of call, as we all sail deathward. Fate can't have any more arrows in its quiver for you that will wound like these. Who was it said that it was astounding how deepest griefs can change in time to a sort of joy? The golden bowl is broken indeed, but it was golden. Nothing can ever take those boys away from you now. Scott.
And this letter from Bill Woods to Mary Clifton after the death of her grown-up daughter in childbirth. It was written in 1936 from Rockhampton.
10th of September. Dear Mary, you will be wondering why you haven't heard from me, but I did not hear of Mabel's death until a fortnight afterwards. It must be an awful blow to you, and it is hard that a girl should be taken in such a way when her life was full of happiness. I feel very sorry for you, and if there's anything we can do for you, don't be afraid to let us know. Hoping that you are feeling better soon. With love to you all, Bill.
If there are conventions for how we express ourselves about death, then surely the suicide note takes those conventions and tips them on their head.
Tuesday. Dearest, I feel certain that I'm going mad again. I feel we can't go through another of those terrible times, and I shan't recover this time. I begin to hear voices, and I can't concentrate. So I am doing what seems the best thing to do. You have given me the greatest possible happiness. You have been in every way all that anyone could be. I don't think two people could have been happier till this terrible disease came. I can't fight any longer. I know that I'm spoiling your life, that without me you could work, and you will, I know. You see, I can't even write this properly. I can't read. What I want to say is I owe all the happiness of my life to you. You have been entirely patient with me and incredibly good. I want to say that. Everybody knows it. If anybody could have saved me, it would have been you. Everything has gone from me but the certainty of your goodness. I can't go on spoiling your life any longer. I don't think two people could have been happier than we have been.
Lots of suicide notes are public declarations of terrible unhappiness. But Virginia's is a private letter of thanks and love. It simply states that she can't go on, makes her apologies, and finishes there. It must be terrible to find a note such as this, but I wonder if its simplicity helped her husband Leonard somehow come to terms with it. Virginia's body was found in April 1941, 3 weeks after she drowned herself. The discovery was a shock for her friends, who'd hoped that she might just disappear without leaving the horror of a corpse.
My dear Vanessa, I am so horrified by the news that Virginia has been found that I scarcely know whether to write to you or not. I had gathered from Leonard some time ago that the search had been given up, and was so thankful, partly because it felt that there was something fitting in the idea of her being carried out to sea, a small comfort in the midst of all this tragedy, and partly because it would spare you and Leonard so much. I really do not know what to say, except that I am haunted by the imagining of what you may both have had to go through. I won't write to Leonard such blundering words as I write to you, but if you think you can do so, perhaps you will tell him sometime that I wrote. Vita Sackville West.
Virginia Woolf had a circle of friends that included some of the most important cultural figures of the 20th century. There are dozens and dozens of letters of shock and remorse at her death. We'll end with a short, simple note written by T.S. Eliot to Leonard Woolf. It's a beautiful example of heartfelt emotion, brevity, and empathy that we should all strive for in the face of grief.
Dear Leonard, I only learned the news yesterday afternoon when I was in London, having had no previous intimation. For myself and others, it is the end of a world. I merely feel quite numb at the moment and can't think about this or anything else. But I want you to know that you are as constantly in my mind as in anyone's. Affectionately, Tom. T.S. Eliot.
Next week is our last in the Art of Letters series, and we end on that most wondrous type of letter, the love letter. We're looking at the deliciously corny and the deliciously lovely too.
Elizabeth Barrett to Robert Browning. You have touched me more profoundly than I thought even you could have touched me. My heart was full when you came here today. Henceforward, I am yours for everything.
Anais, I adore you. You make me believe that everything is possible. Let's drink to the full. I have a great need of you. And Tuesday, prepare to be raped. Wear that beautiful dress you had on when you first came to Clichy. I want to see the white of your flesh against it. I want to commit excesses. Passionately yours, Henry.
It's like begging for mercy of a storm, or killing beauty, or growing old without you. Nobody's got any right to live but us. And they're dirtying up our world, and I can't hate them because I want you so. Zelda Fitzgerald to F. Scott Fitzgerald.
If all that I have said and done, and am still but too ready to say and do, have not sufficiently proved what my real feelings are and must be ever towards you, my love. I have no other proof to offer. Lord Byron.
Diego, my love. Remember that once you finish the fresco, we will be together forever, once and for all. Without arguments or anything. Only to love one another. Frida Kahlo.
I love you, Jeannie. And I want you all to myself.
Henry. Today everything hurts. Not only the separation, but this terrible hunger of body and mind for you, which every day you are increasing, stirring more and more.
Thanks for listening this week. The program was written and produced by Sophie Townsend with Mark Don on technical production. I'm Melanie Tate. Best regards from us until we meet again.